the same thing that I would say to them as well, is that like the movement and the decision is more important than like precision or getting it right, because you're constantly becoming a different version of yourself with every decision.
Welcome to the Inspired to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. I am super excited to have Mirella Della Mora on the show today, and I'm very, very much looking forward to this conversation with this powerhouse woman. And just a little bit of a background, Mirella is a leadership and business coach who turns women of color into in-demand thought leaders who make more money by being who they are and louder. Mirella has been featured in Yahoo Finance and NerdWallet and has led trainings for QuickBooks, General Assembly, and Northwestern University, and has worked with women leaders across the globe, including the United Nations. As the eldest daughter of Mexican immigrants who left a 16-year marketing career, Mirella has monetized not only her skill set, but her story, and has since built a million-dollar business as a single mother. Mirella, it is so inspiring, even just hearing a little bit of that background of who you are. But for those that have never met you before, that don't know who you are yet, that are listening to this show, could you tell us a little bit about who you are, what your story is, and how did you get to the success of where you are today?
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much, Phoebe, for having me on your podcast. I'm excited to just share the story from the context of how we can be different versions of ourselves and like ultimately, you know, still be able to create like our own version of success. Because I think at kind of the highest level, my story is, you know, growing up, as you kind of mentioned in the intro, that I was the eldest daughter. I have two little sisters. My parents both immigrated from Mexico. And I, you know, really grew up with a lot of like, work really hard, do the right thing, you know, don't challenge authority, go to college, get married, like do all the things, kind of ticking off like the grocery checklist of life. It's sort of like how I call it. And a lot of that came from like wanting to make my parents' sacrifices worth it for them growing up poor and everything that like my grandfathers had to do basically to get the families to the United States to kind of get out of their like financial situation, which is, you know, having lots of children, not a lot of money, and, you know, growing up in ranches in Mexico. So I think because I was the oldest, I very much grew up with like very aware of my family's immigration story. So
yeah,
I did that. Like that it is. It's like it's kind of the thing of like, oh well, I'm just gonna do all the things that they've expected of me to do. Because I was the eldest, I actually did that. It's almost like I had my whole life planned in my head before I did it, where it's like,
wow,
college, get straight A's, like get married in your 20s, have babies, buy a house. So
yeah,
I did that. And so
it's amazing.
By the time it's like, so I did it. And what's so interesting is like, I don't think that I ever asked myself if that's what I really wanted until I got there and then I wasn't happy.
Wow.
And the way that that looked for me was I turned 30. And I think a lot of people when they turn 30 really question like, is this the way that I thought my life would be at 30? Because I think once upon a time, you think 30 is so old. And then you get to be 30 and you're like, wait. And so I was like, well, I married my high school sweetheart. I literally married like the first boyfriend I ever had. And we had bought the house and I had just gotten a promotion that brought me over the six-figure mark, like in my marketing career. And so I was like, but how come I can't imagine having babies with this man? Like everything in me was like, don't have his children. This is not a healthy relationship. Like, you don't want that mother-in-law, like overseeing, like, you know, it's just, I was like, man, I don't know if I want to further tie myself in. So I didn't know what else to do. And so I think at the time, like my story was really just like, I started to like take more care of myself at the time. I started like working out and all the things. And I guess, long story short, is like, I found myself and I was able to leave that marriage and that relationship, really like take some risks, quit my job, solo traveled, and I guess reinvent myself. And so I think through that process is how I rebuilt self-trust, how I started to hear myself, how I figured out who I really was, separate from what everybody expected of me. I solo traveled, I met my daughter's father, and moved to London. And I mean, there's so many elements of this, I'm sure that we will find, you know, that we'll probably dig into.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, it brought me to keep making brave choices over and over and never being afraid to start over, including leaving my career and starting my coaching business and raising my daughter on my own, which was not the plan. But because I had done so many like starting over moves, it was just like, okay, this wasn't the plan, but we're going to roll with it. And I guess like long story short, that's how I ended up getting here, is every time kind of being like, is this the life that I want?
Yes.
Is this the life that's really meant for me?
Checking in.
It brought me to, exactly. So it brought me to coaching and, you know, where the business that I've run for almost the last 5 years. And I wouldn't have any other way, for sure. It's been challenging, but still never afraid to start over or pivot if I have to, because I am listening to myself more clearly than ever.
Wow, Mirella, that's awesome. You've touched on so many things. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Like, it's so inspiring, because I can imagine, I mean, like, I'm not a Latina, but I grew up in a country where my parents were immigrants. I'm not, but obviously it's challenging when you're growing up and your family don't necessarily have everything that everyone else's family does have. And you do stick out. Like in your course, you talk about helping women of color. And funnily enough, I actually grew up in a school where everyone was of color, but then it wasn't until high school where it was like, oh, okay, this can either be my strength and the thing that's really exotic, or you can actually have very challenging experiences. And I did have some of that in high school too. I'd love to know, like, you talk about, you have now started to understand that when you don't like a situation, we can shift. We can actually, we as men and women that are in their empowered state, we can actually make choices and decide yes or no and change our mind. I'd love to hear, like, you have a young daughter. What would you say to her growing up if she was to tell you that she was going to change her mind about something, or that something, you know, she decided to go a different path? Like, what are the things that you say to your clients or your daughter?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to my daughter, I want her to know that she doesn't have to please anyone, including me, that my wish for her is for her to listen to herself and figure out who she wants to be and what she wants to do in this world, and that that's not supposed to always be the same thing. And I also would say that there aren't any mistakes, because I think sometimes we hold ourselves back from change because we think, is this the right decision or the wrong decision? And not that we shouldn't check in with ourselves about those things, but I do think that that holds a lot of us back from doing anything different at all. And so I think what I would want her to know is, like, there really aren't mistakes, as long as you like your reason at the time. And that there isn't much that she can't come back from, and that everything is just going to be a learning experience, and that I will always be there for her no matter what, even if it differs from like what I would do. So, and I think the same thing with my clients, because they kind of get caught up in like the right or the wrong thing. And what I tell them is, like, the fastest way to wherever you're going to go is through movement and like action, and that the version of you who has taken step two will see step three more clearly. But sometimes from step one, you won't see step three. So like, you have to start moving forward. And so I guess that's the same thing that I would say to them as well, is that like the movement and the decision is more important than like precision or getting it right, because you're constantly becoming a different version of yourself with every decision.
Oh, I love that. I totally, totally agree.
Yeah.
Now, in your story, obviously you went through so much change and you've like moved countries and had to start over. What were some of the biggest challenges that you experienced in terms of like your mindset or your self-worth and self-esteem, and how did you overcome that?
I think that for me, initially, like travel and moving, I didn't have a logical reason at first, but I think what was happening was my intuition was telling me, like, the only way that you can see yourself differently is in a different environment, because if you're around your same friends or your house and your hometown or whatever, it's really hard to think differently. So I think at the time, my mindset about it was like, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I feel like I just need to go be somewhere else. And another, I think, mindset shift at the time was like, you won't know who you are if you don't spend time by yourself. Everything about my life up until the point that I quit my job, I quit like my six-figure job and I started to solo travel, was that I was always with someone. So it's like, first I was my parents' daughter and I was taking care of my little sisters and, you know, doing all the right things. And then I was in this 13-year relationship from 18 to 31 where he was very controlling. And so I was like, you just need to go. Like, you just need to go be by yourself. You were afraid to even go to lunch by yourself. Like, let alone, I saw it in a way, it was like, where can I go rip the Band-Aid off? Someone asked me this question once when I was like, this seems crazy to just go and move and travel. And I think I was like, okay, would future me look back at this with regret if it didn't turn out the way that I thought? And my answer was like, no, but if I didn't do it, I would look back with regret. So I think that's kind of how I ended up making decisions that didn't like make sense at the time, was more so from like that perspective. And then things came from it, but that's kind of what got me out of like not moving and not making a decision and just kind of following that intuitive nudge, even though it didn't make logical sense at the time.
That is such a good question to ask yourself. What would future me think or say if it looked back and I didn't do that?
Yeah.
And I actually look back at some of the things that I experienced where some people might say, oh, that was a mistake. You know, I feel so terrible for you, or feel so sorry for you. And I'm always amazed at the fact that people can look at a situation and think it's, and just label it as negative. Like, I actually look back at every single one of my relationships and my experiences in life, and at no point have I, unless I'm like going through the emotions and working through my stuff, but like once I have, I never look back and go, that was a bad experience, because it helps you grow into this stronger, empowered woman that is, I mean, I see you as someone that is like fully in her power. And I think that if you hadn't have done that and said, will I regret it? You probably would regret it if you stayed, right? In certain situations that you didn't like. Yeah.
And I was gonna say, I didn't always have the freedom that I had back then. You know, I don't have it now, but I did back then. So it's like, you know, you won't always be in the same circumstance that you're at right now, especially if you have an opportunity.
Totally agree. Did you ever have that like sunk, I think it's called the sunk ship, like when you think, I'm so invested, you know, I've already been like, I did that in my recent relationship where I was like, I'm 7 months in, I'm like too invested, I'm seeing all these red flags, it's going off like crazy, my intuition, everything's telling me to leave and that this person is unsafe. How did you manage to go, you know what, 13 years, stuff it, I'm done?
That is such a good question. I forgot about that that term, like the sunk ship fallacy or sunk ship
fallacy.
Cost.
Yeah.
Sunk ship fallacy. Yeah. And I think I've heard it in regards to like why people will keep gambling even if they've like lost their money. You know what I mean? And how they'll like do it all the time.
Yeah.
No, that's such a good point. And I think sometimes I have to remember like how hard that actually was, because when I told my story, I was almost like, okay. And then one day, but it didn't actually, it was anything but easy. So I think what happened was that, especially with the 13-year relationship and even with my career, because at the time I had been in my career for 9 years when I quit. So it was years that I had put into this whole life, was I was terrified of it working out. Like the idea of it actually working out forever, I was like, I can't see myself being with this partner and having his children and buying another house and like growing old together. Like that seems scary. The same as
I get it.
Climbing the ladder and having my boss's job in the health insurance industry, because I was in the health insurance industry and I was like, I don't want to market health insurance for the rest of my life. So I think when you start to imagine, like, if you knew what the rest of your life was going to look like and it was this current situation working out, and that's terrifying, that's where the sunken ship, I'm like, I'd rather let the sink ship or sink ship, the ship sink.
The ship sink.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So
that's it.
I feel like I totally,
totally resonate. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very like, I very much understand what you mean, because I remember thinking to myself, I'm working so hard to try and make this person like fit the mold. Like, what am I doing? He just Yeah.
doesn't fit the mark at all.
No, it's
And
like it's not going to be any different.
it's not going to be any different. Women that are listening, because, and this is on a very serious note, I think if you are listening to this show right now, this episode, and you're in a relationship where you're like, I just really hope my man's going to change, and I just hope that it's going to get better. And you're like investing your heart and your soul, because that's what women do. We invest our heart and our soul into our partners and into our relationships and into our families. And then what we do is we make reasons and we make excuses and logic and all that. But if you were telling yourself like exactly this, what would life look like with this person long term, and you aren't married, like just get out as soon as you can. Like, from firsthand experience, I think just get out as soon as you can, because there's a whole world out there, and starting again is beautiful at any age. And I think that from my own experience, because I think motherhood is a really big thing for me. Like, I know for sure that my goal is to become a mum and to like have a whole family and a beautiful family. But I think if you end up being a mother and you think, yeah, I've got the house, I've got the husband, I've got the child, and you're not happy, that is a very, very lonely, very, very miserable place where you're
absolutely
putting on this act in front of your family and your friends, and you're trying to pretend to be, something that is not really happening behind closed doors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then you're just adding more things into the mix to like tie yourself into it. You know, I think it just becomes a lot harder to leave once you get married or you have a house and then you have children, because then you start to think about all the logistics involved in leaving. And while that shouldn't keep people, it actually does. You think about like our finances are joint, like we, all these things. And then that literally will keep people, or they're like, oh, well, our son is two. And like, maybe when he starts school, and it's like, you're always going to have a reason. So that's such a good point.
Yeah. So, Marilla, I think it's really brave that you've left and started over. And what's really amazing about your story is you're a single mom. You've made seven figures. Like, let that land, listeners. It is possible. So no matter if you have children or you don't, you can leave, you can start again, and you can succeed. So, Marilla, I'd love to hear, first of all, when you moved away from London and you moved to the US, what was that like? I mean, you're starting over, you've got a child, you've got to like reinvent everything and get familiar with everything and focus, and then find your niche, you know, find your craft. Like, what were some of the things that you did where you go, okay, like other people should or can do this, because this is what I went through and this is how I did it.
Yeah. So that, I'll add a little bit of context so that people kind of know, like, when I moved from London back to the United States, the reason that I was in London was because part of my journey was quitting my job to solo travel. And I had always felt drawn to be in London. And I met my ex-husband my first day in London. And this was like at a time that I didn't want to meet anybody. The last thing I wanted was to have a long distance relationship. So when we got married, because you kind of have to get married or something, because it's, you can't just move to each other's countries. A year into the marriage, it ended. It wasn't something I saw coming. It was something that, you know, he decided. And then I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, and we had been trying. And so the context of me leaving was, my marriage is ending and now I'm pregnant. And I can't stay, because if I stay, my child will be born in the UK and then I'll have to get permission to leave. And yet I don't have any support here. So at the time, I think I just was like, I don't even have time to be sad about me. Like, now I'm kind of thinking like, how can I surround myself like with support? So when I moved, I was pregnant. And at this point, it was kind of like all of the things that I had attached my identity to, like, I was a marketing director. We lived in a really nice building in West London. I was married. People had watched us fall in love. And, you know, this whole like eat, pray, love story. It's like it all kind of got stripped away, because it's like I had to move. I thought I had to leave my job. Thankfully, I got to keep it. So at that time, it was kind of like an ego death because it was like a lot of the labels that I had for myself were like going away, and now I was going to be a mom. So it really was like, I'd say the biggest ego death, because I spent all my money moving there and then moving back. And then in the divorce, that it was like the first time I didn't have money. Like I moved back in with my parents because I had a job, but like I couldn't afford to live on my own. And, you know, there's no paid maternity leave in America, especially if you were, you know, didn't have a job or was self-employed. So I just remember at the time being like, if I have to accept help, thankfully I have it. Thankfully I have a place to live where I can start over and raise my daughter. And I'll tell stories about this one day. So, but at the time I just felt like I'm so ashamed. Like I had to accept help because I was so independent. Like I moved out at 19 and I paid for all my own bills. And I literally had to get on food stamps, like because I made so little money. I couldn't work because I had a baby and I didn't have any other way of having a job because I was pregnant. So it was like, I just was like, well, if whatever I have to do, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to rebuild my savings. And I think after I went through that experience of like giving birth, you know, in a way, like humbling myself to just be like, wow, I actually need to get on government assistance to get free healthcare because America doesn't have free healthcare. It was literally like, wow, you could do everything quote unquote right and still end up as someone who needs government assistance, needs help from your family in order to do this. So I think after that, I just very much like led from a place of like, I think I can hold space for people in a way that is with even less judgment because I've been in situations that I once thought would be my worst nightmare and it would never happen to me. Yeah. And then it did. And then it did happen to me. And so it's almost like I don't get rocked that easily by anything, even helping a friend. If they think it's the end of the world or if it's a client, it's just like, it's okay. Like no one is judging you, but you got to do what you got to do. And I think that's what ultimately made me feel like, okay, I'm in the workforce now, but one day I want to do something with this. Like one day I want to help other people to love and trust themselves more, to turn like difficult stories into the reason that people want to work with them or into their thought leadership. Because I felt like this was too meaningful and too difficult for it to just be a personal thing that I went through. I wanted it to serve other people too.
Oh my goodness. I'm like, I can literally feel, and that is such a, like, it's such a humbling experience. And I agree. I think when you've hit rock bottom and you're like, you really like, it's really a desolate situation. And you're like, wow, I never, ever, ever thought I would ever be here. You turn around when you climb back out of that, you will turn around and you'll thank yourself for that situation and the person that put you in that situation. Cause I know, Mirella, you didn't put yourself in that situation. Like from conversations that we've had, you did not deserve that. This can happen to anyone. And I've been repeatedly saying this on Instagram, no matter how intelligent a person is, you can find yourself in these situations just purely because you are a decent person. And I hope that that sinks into a
personality trait.
It's not a personality trait, and it's definitely not like a lack of intelligence or lack of intuition or that your radar was off. It's just that there are just people out there that are like, that are just so, they're just malice. And that's the only word I can choose at this stage. But I think what we can do with those situations when we hit rock bottom is we can climb back out of that and we can learn from that and connect with people with so much more space, soul, and heart.
Yeah.
Exactly what you've just said. And that resilience has definitely, you know, made you who you are and helped you to be like completely determined, I'm guessing, because when you've financially hit rock bottom, you are determined to like succeed.
Yeah.
How you hold space for women that have gone through different phases and stages of their rock bottom that might not, that some might be worse than you, some might not. Hopefully most don't, but you've got that space now to like understand and support them. Like what is that like?
Yeah, I think that just through kind of going through my journey, I think I just became less afraid, because I think a lot of my motivation before was avoid my worst case scenario. Like, I think that's a lot of times we'll be guided by like, well, I'm doing this because like this may not work out. So for one, I would never have even started my business if I hadn't, I don't think that I would have gone for it as, I don't want to say risky, but like I took a lot of risks and I don't think I would have taken them, even though this wasn't my first business. I had another business when I was in London, and it was a dating app, but I wasn't putting my money where my mouth is the same way that it was in my business. But I think because I had to start over financially, there's something about if I rebuilt, then I could rebuild again. And I think it kind of prepared me to be a businesswoman, because now that I have my story of going from marketing director to like pregnant and on food stamps and starting over financially, I now have met like some of the most successful people I know have been in situations where like they grew a fortune and then they lost it all, and then they filed a bankruptcy, and then they started another business. But because of that, they were able to spot like risks, but not have at the same time not be held back by fear. And then I think you come back really empowered, knowing like, oh, I know how to bounce back this time faster. So I think that's what I brought into entrepreneurship. You know, I didn't immediately become an entrepreneur afterwards. So it's like it took a few years of me being like, okay, let me raise my baby. And, you know, going back into trying to get a different job, because I still had my job based in London. And I think because I was just like, okay, I can get paid this salary, which seems very safe, or I can, maybe it could be even better. And so I don't think that I would have thought maybe it could be even better than a tech job, you know, a marketing tech job. So I think that when I decided I'm going to walk away from the workforce forever and I'm going to, you know, start a business, I went into it with like, I can help people with identity shifts, not just building a business, because I had to do that too. So I think it allowed me to help women who had their whole identities tied up in being someone else before, but they really desired to either grow their business or start a business. And I also was able to help them with like, you had all your self-worth and all of your identity and all of your ego tied into this thing. And that's equally important for you to find who you really are. Otherwise, you're never going to do it. And I don't think I would have been able to like see that if I hadn't been someone who like had to, you know, find myself again, and something where I had my whole identity wrapped up in a career. So I think that it just allowed me to, like I said, be a coach who helps people with the way that they see themselves and their identity shifts, not just the actions that they're taking, because there could be a lot of grief in going after what you want, even when it works out, because of, you know, like what you have to leave behind.
That's so, so true. Totally. How do you like help people get past those identity shifts? I mean, if someone has never seen it, even in their families, you know, they've just never even imagined they could do that. How do you help them like, you know, manifest that and create that as their new reality?
That's a really good question. I was like, especially if you haven't seen it done before, almost everyone that I've worked with is like the first in many ways. They sometimes are not the first entrepreneur. They've had parents who own a restaurant. A lot of my clients' parents like owned restaurants or something having to do with food, but they saw their parents struggle with it. So their identity around entrepreneurship is either it's not possible because they only saw, you know, that their parents worked hard and just had jobs, or they saw entrepreneurship is not profitable and it's hard and it's going to cost you money and you're always going to struggle. So I think that the way that I help them, or really like initially, is like helping them understand all of the stories that shaped them. Because when you can observe things as stories, you're less likely to like internalize them as this is just the way it is, or this is just the way that I am. Because if you could start to separate this is just the way it is, or this is just the way I am, you'll start to be able to like observe like, are you actually a perfectionist, or were you just kind of punished when you weren't precise? Or are you really bad with money, or, you know, all these things? So I think it's that. And then I think I also advise people, because I realized this is what helped me, is like, how can you surround yourself with people who are also asking themselves the same questions that you're asking, or that are also dreaming similarly to you? Because it's really hard to change your mind or to see what's possible when everyone around you doesn't, like, isn't also doing those things. So I think, like, finding spaces, finding community, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a Facebook group, whether it is just friends that are also doing that, you start to think, I'm not crazy. Like, other people are also believing this, dreaming this, trying to do this. And that's another thing I would say. Whether you are, let's say, someone who's been through a divorce and you don't know anyone who's been through a divorce, it's like, how could you go and find other people who are doing this? If you want to start a business, where are there people who are also, like, exchanging business ideas? So I think finding other people like you helps you to change your brain as far as, like, what you think is possible. So sometimes working with a coach helps them do that. But if they're not in one of my groups and they're just with me one-on-one, I'm just like, go and share your story. Like, where can you go and meet people like you? Because that's an important part of creating something you've never done before, you know?
I totally, totally agree. Like, your community and who you surround yourself with is everything. That quote about, like, you are the average of the 5 or 7 people you surround yourself with. I actually think that it's true to a degree, but it's not really, like, don't let that be limiting as well. Like, if the people around you haven't made 7 figures, it doesn't mean you can't.
Yeah.
Like, you were telling me, like, remember that conversation that we had before this interview? I think it was, like, a week or 2 weeks ago. And you were telling me about how you, like, absorbed yourself in, like, Marie Forleo and Jenna Kutcher and Amy Porterfield and all this amazing content, which is obviously – they're obviously not surrounding you in terms of, like, they're physically having coffee with you and you're having dinner with them and you're seeing them, but you are surrounded by that type of mindset. You know, you're listening to their podcasts and their videos, and that in itself is a form of surrounding yourself with people that are where you want to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Podcasts and books. That was a big thing at the beginning. Podcasts and books changed my life. So it was just, like, certain people that I found. And remember, Jenna Kutcher had a Facebook group for her podcast and I joined it. And, like, even just seeing people say, hey, I'm looking for, like, a virtual assistant, or, hey, does anyone have any good idea, any recommendations for bookkeepers? And I had no business at the time, that it's just like, oh, this is just so normal. Like, people are just, like, having these conversations that, yeah, I think it can start off as a book. It can be a podcast, or you can just go and find communities like that too. So that in itself, like, totally, that was a good example. 'Cause I forgot at the beginning, it was like, literally books. That was it. That was the beginning.
That is amazing. I love that. Now, Mirella, you obviously work with people that have been through certain events in their lives where there's an associated emotion. And I remember us talking about, well, it might have even been a video that you shared recently about, like, neutralizing this by listing out the pros and the cons. Do you think that logic is enough? Like, obviously there are things like the DeMartini method where you can just neutralize a charge and an event, but is logic enough, or do you take your clients through something that is beyond just head and mind stuff?
Yeah. So I think short answer is, like, logic isn't enough, especially for those of us who have, like, very real circumstances that where trauma, like, lives in the body. And I'd say most of us have some form of trauma, but I'd say that, like, women of color, folks who come from, like, immigrant backgrounds, anyone who hasn't felt either fully safe to be themselves will have trauma. And so logic can't be accessed without safety. And so when we don't feel safe, the logic escapes us. And so I think a big part of what I do is help my clients find safety through validation. And the way that I do that is not just validation, you're great. Validation more so in normalizing the emotion and helping them attribute it to the cause.
Wow.
So, like, let's say the logic is, in order for you to grow your business, you need to post more often because people can't find you. And, you know, you need to do the thing that scares you. Do it scared, right? Like, okay, that sounds logical. Like, do it scared. You're going to be scared. You just have to do it scared. But your body will, like, not let you show up. Like, you'll be in freeze. You'll overthink it. So it's like, it doesn't matter if I tell you that, you're not going to do it. That's the disconnect between knowing what you want to do and actually being able to do it. So a lot of my coaching and education is kind of, like, around what is all of the, like, why does this make sense is probably the first question. Like, why does it make sense that that's hard for you? Why does it make sense that you're overthinking? Why does it make sense that you feel like you're in danger? And it's like, well, where have you felt this way before? It's like, well, yeah, I remember, like, I was always criticized and I was told like I was talking too much and I was all this. So once someone's able to answer the question of when their body is like stopping them from doing a thing and the logic it doesn't isn't like kicking, you know, like they can't access it. It's always like, what am I feeling and why does this make sense and where have I felt this before? And in that, the person's able to be so much more compassionate because it's like the thing you're reacting to isn't posting on social media. It's all of the times that you were, someone jumped down your throat because you like weren't perfect, right? So that is what helps build safety because you recognize I'm not like maybe 5% of me is responding to now and 95% of me is responding to before, like things that felt similar to this. And that starts to increase someone's window of tolerance to do a thing that scares them. And that's where the logic can come in a little bit more. But until then, the logic is kind of like hidden behind like a somatic reaction, like a nervous system reaction in your body or a trauma response, which is like much more relevant to women and women of color. So even when I leadership coach women in corporate, it's the same thing. It's like, well, you just have to set boundaries and you need to like advocate for yourself. And they're just like, oh, why does this feel so hard? And I help them answer the question, why does this feel so hard?
Wow. We have so much to talk about here because it's one thing to like identify it, but then it's also another thing to like release it and release it from our bodies. I feel like that's such a journey because like for me, for example, awareness is not an issue. Like I've been like reflecting and, you know, doing like coaching and, you know, the personal growth and development work for like 7 years. Reflection is definitely not the issue, but it's like letting it move through and just like getting grow like growing more and more strong and aware and also just releasing trauma. I think that there's just
And it's a difference between knowing, like how you said, you can be so self-aware and still carry the emotion because we haven't actually acknowledged it. Like it's there, but it's hard. Like I have had to, I tell my clients this, but I also had to learn it around like, are you actually feeling the emotion or are you intellectualizing it? You know, because when you're like, I understand it logically, but then what you end up kind of having to do, this is still what I do as an entrepreneur. It's literally my job, is like, I'm kind of grieving in it in reverse. So it's like, I'm a lot of times when it comes up, it's like, oh no, this is the part of me that's afraid of being abandoned because I was abandoned in marriage. And it's like, it's so deep. Like, we don't always know that that's actually what's happening, but like, sitting with the scared part is hard because sometimes we're annoyed that the scared part is coming up. We're annoyed that these parts are trying to protect us. And we're like, gosh, like, why are you here? I just need to like get these things done. Like, but that part is still going to hang out until we're like, all right, you're still here 10 years later. And like letting it be okay. That's the hardest part is that a lot of like doing scary things and reinventing yourself is really almost like grieving in advance, like in reverse for like the parts of you that you couldn't hold space for at the time, you know?
Oh, I totally resonate and I totally agree with it. Like sometimes when you're doing the work and you look back, you're like, oh my goodness, you know, I went through that and I didn't even know. And like, you know, and grieving, even like your childhood, like I didn't get to have a childhood that everybody else did. Or, you know, I thought I had everything, but it turns out my parents were doing the best that they could, those types of things. And there is
Or being
grief.
angry.
And that's all grief too. Like when you acknowledge that, when you actually go back and acknowledge that your, you know, things weren't so great and going through the grief, the anger, the pain, the crying, all of that, that's really important. That's definitely a way to neutralize and heal trauma.
One of the things that I can share, like an example of like what this has looked like for me and how it's like it isn't just a one and done thing, is that whenever I am activated financially in business, whether it is, you know, a sales dip or I planned a bunch of investments and then like, you know, anything having to do with money, it activates my abandonment wound around marriage because I'm like, I wasn't supposed to be doing this on my own. I was supposed to have a husband that was supposed to be here. Other people have it easier than me because they have someone who's like to help them raise their child. And so I have to deal with that. It's like whenever it comes up, I'm like, here it is again. Here it is again. It's this anger, it's this resentment on like, I didn't choose this. And that's just a, a normal part of like doing things that scare you and healing and all of that, because it may just come up many, many times until you truly are like, this makes sense. Like, you're still upset about that. You're still mad about that. Like, you didn't deserve that. That wasn't your fault. So that's just a thing that I wanted to share around like people being like, oh, no, but I know. But no, but I know that already. It's like, yeah, you might know it, but it doesn't mean it's not going to affect you. Oh, no, but I'm past that already. It's like, are you? Or are you just, or is this just going to be something that comes up from time to time? And that's totally okay. Because I still have parts of me who still show up regularly, depending on like what is activating them to show up. And then they're just like, hey, we're still hurt. Hey, we're still mad.
Thank you so much for sharing. Like, this has been such a vulnerable and raw conversation. And yeah. I just, Marilla, I just look at you with so much strength, and you have so much courage and bravery, because no, you weren't meant to do it alone. And I get it, because I've experienced that anger as well, where I'm like, yeah. Like, seriously, you tried to get me into that situation, and you tried yeah. to like, you know, and anyway, I don't want to like make this about myself, yeah. but I think that clearly that has strengthened you. And like, from being a child of a single mum, I can say with absolute like conviction that seeing my mum go from not having an education around like anything that she was doing, and like working in, I think she wasn't just a housewife, like she was just like just doing work that, you know, just to earn a tiny little bit of money, to divorcing my dad and then going, you know what, I'm gonna like reinvent myself. And she like went to beauty school and then became the best beauty therapist at Melbourne's only 5-star hotel. She was like doing facials on A-grade celebrities, like literally getting, you know, like a free ticket to concerts by like old school A-grade celebrities. Watching her and then becoming face of Women's Day magazine and then starting her own business, all of that, like, I cannot tell you that if people ask me, like, how did I get to where I am today? I look at my mom and I'm like, it was my mom. Like, mom is so, her story is so amazing. And I think you just have no idea, like, how much that affects, like, your children. Because if you stayed and you had someone like giving you child, like in Australia we call it child support, which is really not much, and a lot of men can get away with not paying child support, which is terrible, and I know that from like witnessing. But I think that you have this ability to inspire your children, because if you were, you know, with someone and you were getting a little bit more finances from someone that was making your life and your child's life miserable, gosh, it would be so different to the kind of freedom and the beautiful life that you're living now, where you get to have fun and go to Mexico and see your friends and not have someone tell you, you know, at this time, at this place, I want to see my daughter, and like still be manipulating you or hurting you or abusing you psychologically, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. Definitely there's pros and cons.
Yeah. And like, hearing you talk about your mom, like, and how she reinvented herself from you know, after being a single mom, and like your experience and how you see her, helped me see that like me being a single mom is not the worst thing in the world for my daughter. Because I know that in certain seasons it can feel really heavy, kind of like, wow, I don't get to give her what my plan was, like, which was a two-parent household. And, you know, maybe I'd love to tell her yes more to certain things that she wants, even though I tell her yes for a lot of things. But I think I forget sometimes that, like, watching your mom, who's a single mom, go after the things that she wants is so inspiring. And that even though there's some things that are like worse than not being in a two-parent household, that sometimes the two-parent household that's unhappy could actually be so much worse. So thank you for sharing that around your mom, because like, it just made me think, like, I wonder how she's gonna see me one day. Because she's too little for me to fully know. Like, I can see like she loves me and she wants to be with me, and you know, she tells me I'm the best mommy and all the things, but it's like, she's 7. So I know that like one day when she's a teenager and she understands a little bit more about what was behind the divorce and how I why she lived with her grandparents when she was a baby, and then we moved around. Like, she's gonna one day see that, and right now she can't see it. So thank you for sharing that, because it made me just kind of flash forward to like what stories will my daughter tell about me, and like what she saw, like how she saw me was so important. That's kind of what you showed me. It was like you witnessing your mom and the woman she was being is more important than a two-parent household at all costs.
Absolutely, because a two-parent household can be traumatic, and I definitely like gained a lot from growing up with my grandparents. You know, my grandpa was a Chinese doctor, my grandma was a calligrapher, so I learned a lot about like wellness and wholeness, and then Chinese culture while my mom was out there building her new life and recreating herself. And I totally agree. I mean, the fact that you are willing to share with her what it could have been and the real story behind, you know, I think that's actually really powerful. Once, you know, children get to a certain age, it is important to fill them in on like what really happened, because they will ask questions, and it's better that it's just so much better that they know.
This is true, because I also just want her to know too that like she can always choose herself, and that there's, because she's gonna see that like I could have tried again or made it work or whatever, but that this was the best thing for us. So yeah, I think that that's something that doesn't always come to mind straight away now, because she's little and just is very aware of two-parent households, much more so than when she was younger. But that's also like a normal thing, I think, just for kids to see that, and that that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not doing the best that you can, you know? So yeah,
I think
it sucks sometimes, but I understand. It's like it sucks for me because I feel guilty, but I also understand that like she's so loved. I have my parents. We live here in the same city. They're with her right now. Like, she gets to grow up with her grandparents, which is like with my parents, which is like so wonderful. And I know that like if I had stayed in London and had her, like it might have been that we came home once a year, or like I don't know what that was going to be like.
Oh gosh, it sounds like if you had stayed in London, it would have been misery
It would have been
from,
really lonely.
yeah, it would have been like such a different scenario. Because I know, like, till this day, I know that I always had the warmth of, even though it wasn't my mum and dad together, you know, I mean, I got to see my mum and dad at different times, dad on weekends, mum throughout the week, but I got the love and the warmth of family, and that's all that matters. So, you know, till this day, my mom always reminds me, like, just remember, like, you had your grandparents and me and lots of relatives, lots of cousins and stuff, and you might not have had the childhood that everyone else did, but I just remember in my teenage years coming to terms with, actually, my family is not that bad. Like, it's actually really beautiful, even though it's annoying to have to pack my bags every Friday and have to like move, and that was an ordeal. I actually found that I myself was starting to see the positives and go, compared to some people that have, you know, both parents where they're experiencing unhappiness or, you know, a toxic environment, I'm actually really happy my mom and dad are friends now. And, you know, I just started to see more positives, and I became a person that was, I think children of like your child is probably going to be more resilient than others. Like, I know for sure that it made my childhood has made me more resilient and much more positive. Like, I often hear people say, "You're such a positive person." And I'm like, I think I'm a positive person because I've been through more than you think I have. Like, I think,
I
you
love
know,
that.
like
Because
nobody
I've been
really.
through more, not because you just are naturally positive. I always think about like people
No.
who are positive or who can hold space for other people and help them feel safe is because they've experienced the opposite.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, hence going back to what we said earlier in the show, that no matter what the situation is, you can thank a really, you know, a really difficult situation, a really challenging time, because it will evolve you. It will make you blossom and glow, make you stronger. And, you know, I still remember my ex even saying to me, like, "You're really strong. Like, you're stronger than you think." And I still, yeah, I am. Don't you dare try and, you know, manipulate that, because, you know, that like it's in us. Like, it is in me, and I know it's in you, where there's this like fight. Like there's this, I guess, ability to be soft and feminine and loving and forgiving, but there is also this fight for our own justice and right and our own ability to have freedom. And I think for me, when I won that fight, was the day I won that fight was the day I left. It's not about like,
That's so good.
It's not about bringing someone down. Like after that, I obviously had to heal anger and all that kind of stuff. But the day I won was the day I left. It's that there is no more fight now. It, after that, it's like I've already won because I'm not being manipulated by you.
Yeah.
And everything else now is my own healing. And I'll just thank that person and go, bye-bye. But like, and good luck to whoever else you try to manipulate because that's not my problem. And
the letting
I'm
go.
Now in my, the letting go,
the power.
Being in your own lane. It's so freeing.
Yep. And that's like the flip side of being very like ambitious and not giving up is that sometimes we don't give up on things that that actually aren't meant for us and aren't good for us. So I think that that is where the wisdom comes in, you know, of really like, am I gripping onto something that I'm not meant to hold on to? So I feel like that's such a good call out, especially for those of us who are like very like problem solvers and we don't give up. It's like, sometimes it's not giving up, it's letting go. You know, which is like what you kind of alluded to.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Huge conversation, Marilla. And I feel like we could just keep going. And I'm so glad that we connected. I'm so glad that we
Me
spoke before
too.
this interview. I'd love to ask you some rapid fire questions before we wrap this up. And these are just five questions that the listeners can get to know you a little bit more.
Okay.
So first one is, if there was one thing that you cannot live a single day without, whether it's physical or non-physical, what would it be?
Oh, physical or non-physical?
One thing or
I would just
person or
say,
any.
yeah, like now, honestly, like I just feel like it's like my daughter's voice. So even when I'm like traveling or something, it's just like messaging her. So yeah, I think now it's just that connection.
Your daughter. I had a feeling you would say that. That's so
Yeah.
beautiful. What or who inspires you to do what you do today?
I think about my grandmother a lot. My mom's mom. She comes to me in dreams. And I think about, she inspires me, even though she's not here. She's been gone for like 20 years. But I just know, knowing how much trauma she went through and that she was an orphan at a time that being poor and an orphan and a girl in like rural Mexico would have meant like you know, didn't stand a chance. Like, I think she inspires me because I always felt like she never let those things like harden her. She was so full of love and like just wanted to be surrounded by everyone who loved her. And she just always made me feel like the most special person in the world. And I miss her a lot. So I think when I think about now and like the hard days, I think about what she would say to comfort me and like kind of wanting to make her proud in a different way because she didn't have those options. She had a ton of children, no money, like all the things. So I do think about her a lot.
Wow. And I hope your daughter thinks about her grandmother that she gets to spend time with so much while she's growing up
I
that
know. I
way
hope so.
when she grows up. I'm pretty sure she will. It sounds, you know, like,
Oh, she adores them both.
Yeah. I
So
mean,
much.
I still am very inspired by my late grandfather and my grandmother to this day. So yeah, the impact that grandparents have on their children and the influence is massive.
It's such a different type of love, like I think as well, because it's just very like you don't it necessarily like they don't have to like love you in that way, but it's just like I just always felt so safe. And I'm happy that I got to have that experience, like of knowing my grandparents, like all of them, like as a child, you know? So,
Yeah, absolutely. Marilla, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What would you want to have accomplished?
So I would love to be running a leadership academy for women of color that is within different organizations, not just me working with folks one-on-one, but like licensing my program to organizations. I would love for my daughter and I to be living in a home that I own because that's the next like goal for me in a very expensive city. And that house has a hammock and fruit trees and we live a really peaceful life. And I hope that in those 5 years that I find love again, like my life partner, and that he feels like home and my life feels peaceful. Like that's what I really hope to find in 5 years or less. Hopefully I don't have to wait that long.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I'd love to see that happen for you as well. And
yeah,
again, it's possible, you know, you've made seven figures, so you can manifest that dream man.
Even saying it out loud, like, why does, you know, why does my next million feel like so much easier than like the man? because it's actually like more scary, because I'm like, how about I just get on dating apps again? Because that's scary. So like, just for anybody, I always say that folks who like try again at love are so brave, because I can't currently bring myself to want to try again. But yet I'm going after things that scare a lot of people in business. So
wow. Yeah. I think for me, I am going after that part more than the business part, but it's whatever we focus on, right? It's whatever we like do the work on. So you've done the work to overcome the barriers with business to get to where you are. You'll just need to do the same work with the relationship stuff. And sometimes it does mean revisiting the past, but yeah, I love
willing
that.
To do it.
Yeah.
I'm willing to do
you
it.
Just, it's just you've just a lot put of it like, out.
I know. I was like, now I said it out loud. Because anytime I've said things out loud in the past, I'm just like, well, now it's out in the universe. And I admit
now you're determined.
Right.
I think. I mean, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely am. It's some things are scarier to say out loud than others. And that's
yeah. Mirella, what's one big takeaway you've had recently that's changed the way you show up or the way you see the world?
That is such a good question. What's a big takeaway? I'm going to pause and think about that one, because I think this is such a good question. I think this has come up. I think this one was just something that released a lot of shame for me, that when things don't turn out the way that you want them to, specifically this came up in business for me, that we don't need to make that mean anything about ourselves. We just have to know what, like, why did it happen and what do we want to do about it? Versus this is never going to happen. This means something about me, because I think that's how we kind of get caught up in shame and like almost like black and white thinking and kind of in victim mentality. So I think that normalizing that has helped me kind of get out of like tough situations. So I think that came back to like what I talked about recently on a podcast, which is around like, what if the thing that is happening could be a little more neutral and not mean anything about you? Like, what do you want to do? Who do you want to be in this situation? And even though I've gone through past things that have caused me to test that, like, I think it's also just come up recently. So yeah, I think that's kind of the main thing, is like that I still get to decide like who I want to be, and that not no circumstance has to necessarily mean anything about me or like my worthiness.
Yeah. Wow. That's huge. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah. And lastly, if you could leave the world with one message, what would it be?
That the world would be better off by you accessing more of yourself and who you are versus what others expect of you. That the world actually needs that and will benefit more from that than anything else. Because I think I've seen the opposite of that play out a lot more.
Oh my goodness. Totally agree. Yes. Beautiful. Yeah. Mirella, thank you so much for your time today, for like pouring out this hour of just the most beautiful, I guess, insight into your life. And yeah, I'm so grateful that we've had this time to chat, and I'm so grateful for what you've, you know, for what you've shared, and also just for your strength and resilience in going through what you've been through and coming out the other side to like give to your daughter, your family, and the world. Like, that is so inspiring. Thank you,
Phoebe. I'm glad that we crossed paths, and just like for us, just for having me on and you sharing your story with me too, because it just, you've reminded me in a lot of ways that like my story is important to share, because you'll never know who sees themselves in it, because we've shared things and have crossovers that I never would have thought, and we wouldn't have known if we weren't out here telling our stories, you know?
That's exactly right. So listeners, thank you so much again for tuning into the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. Make sure that you either watch this episode on YouTube if you prefer video, or you listen. And of course, if you feel like it, it would be amazing if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And I look forward to more episodes to share with you guys so that you can thrive and shine in business and in life. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.